Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the new screensavers is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. The new screensavers is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/NSS. And by Hover. Register a domain name with Hover and build your online brand today. Go to hover.com/twit and save 10% off your first purchase.
A review and teardown of Essential Phone, flying the DJI Mavic Pro, and hacking IR remotes. Live from the Twit Eastside Studios in beautiful Petaluma, it's the new Screensavers.
Diana from Detroit, very nice job. Welcome to New Screensavers, episode 121 for September 9th, 2017. I'm Leo Laporte.
And I'm Jason Howell.
Yes, he is.
Hi.
And before we start, we should say a couple of things. First of all, a shout out. Be safe to all of our friends Florida. Of course, Hurricane Irma. I'm looking at a picture of the southernmost tip of Key West where Irma is coming in, about to hit landfall. There's actually people standing there waiting for a sleeper wave to take them away.
Weird. This kind of looks fake.
Please be safe.
It looks like what is the camera effect where it makes everything look miniature?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It kind of has tilt that quality
shift,
too.
Yeah.
The tilt shift quality. Tilt shift. But, man, yeah, be safe.
I call this crazy shift. Well, good. I'm glad you got a GoPro shot of that, sir. You might want to go seek shelter. I guess it has. The problem is if you grew up in Florida or you live in Florida, you kind of.
You're hardened to this a little bit, I think. Yeah.
I remember when I was a kid living in Rhode Island, a hurricane hit, and I went out and I thought, this is cool. Wow. The problem is it's cool until it's not.
Anyway, and that switch can literally happen at the spur of the moment.
Mother Nature is nothing to toy with. That's number one. Number two. A tip of the hat to a man who really was the inspiration for what I do and many of my colleagues as tech journalists, Jerry Pournelle, who passed away yesterday at the age of 84. There was a post on his Chaos Manor site by his son, Alex, who said Jerry went to Dragon Con,
which, not too long ago, science fiction event,
had a great time. He passed away painlessly. Jerry was a great science fiction writer. If you haven't read his books, Moat in God's Eye and Lucifer's Hammer, many others that he co-wrote with Larry Niven, they're must-read. And, of course, he made 20 appearances on Twit over the years. We did two triangulations with him. And his Chaos Manor column in Byte Magazine was what inspired me. It was the first time anybody had written from the point of view of a user grappling with installing stuff, getting your computer working. He did it in such an authentic and genuine way. We all identified with it. And as I said, he really informed what I do here, representing the user point of view. And so we'll miss you, Jerry. Godspeed wherever you're headed. A great man, a great writer, and we're sorry to lose him. Jerry Pournelle passed away yesterday at the age of 84. Meanwhile, we got a big show for you. We got something brand new to try, the Essential Phone. Jason and I leg wrestled, and as you might expect, he won.
I'm all legs, so it makes sense.
He got to review it. We got it on Tuesday. You've had it all week. You also got the little plug-in 360 camera that goes along with it.
Yeah, little module.
This is the, right on the back. First phone from the man who invented Android, Andy Rubin. He was at Danger, did the sidekick. A lot of hotly anticipated, but we'll find out what you think of it in just a little bit. We'll also get iFixit on, because as you know, iFixit is the site you go to fix almost anything. They start by taking it apart. They've taken apart the Essential Phone. We'll find out how repairable it is with Kelsey Weber from iFixit. We're going to have the... Remember last week, Roberto Baldwin and I had dinner on the show? I don't know if you remember. It was actually quite delicious. We made it in that new oven, the Tovala. Megan Maroney's had it for a while. She's, of course, a mom and has to cook for kids. She doesn't like to cook. She doesn't do the cooking in the house. So she did a review of the Tovala. Can it replace all that hard work? We'll have a review of the Tovala oven. Padre and Megan with some ideas on what you could do with old remotes lying around for our know-how segment. A couple of calls for help. And I have something I've been just so excited about. And I want to show you my new, in this case, my new drone.
What?
The DJI Mavic Pro.
Looks like a DSLR case.
Yeah.
It's tiny.
It isn't it? But the whole thing's in here, including three batteries, the remote control, the drone itself. You know what's funny? The day after I bought this, I lived up to my reputation.
That's crazy.
The day after I bought this, DJI announced the new Mavic Pro Platinum at Mobile World Congress, or IFA, I should say, in Berlin. I don't have the Platinum. It's not out yet. But I'm told the Platinum is just better battery life, a couple of minutes extra battery life. This gets 27 minutes on a battery. That's plenty for me. And it's a little quieter. Drones are noisy.
Yeah, I know. I'm very curious to know in that small of a package how loud it is.
Well, you know what? I haven't crashed it yet. Let's launch it in the studio a little later on.
Yeah, let's
You can
do that.
Watch me live crash the drone for the first time. I've crashed every other drone I've owned. We'll see. I haven't crashed this one yet. First, let's get started with our hot topics of the week. And, of course, the hottest topic.
Yeah, it's pretty hot.
OMG Equifax.
This is crazy.
So, first of all, it's crazy to begin with, that you think about it, that there are actually four. I didn't know this, but there are four companies that have one business model to collect every bit of information they can about you with or without your permission and then sell it to anybody who wants to know that information. First of all, the fact that that company and that business exists is insane. We need
it. Let alone three major ones.
Four, so there's Equifax, but there's also TransUnion, Experian, and there's a little one I didn't know about called Innovis. So there's four that do this, and probably more even that we don't know about. I understand why we need this. If you're going to rent an apartment, if you're going to buy a car, if you're going to get a credit card, people need to go somewhere to say, hey, is Jason's credit good? Should I lend him money, in effect? So that's what these credit reporting agencies do. And they do it because everybody who gives credit also pumps data about you and me and everybody else in the country back into it. You would think, first of all, it's a crap business, and I hate them. They're not interested in privacy. They make their living selling your information.
Right.
So right there on the face of it, I understand it's a necessary evil, but it's a crap business. But you would think if a company does this, that they would take very seriously protecting that data. July 29th, Equifax found out they'd been hacked in I don't believe a word they say. They say 143 million records were, you know, exfiltrated by bad guys.
And you're thinking that number is more.
Every time these things have happened, the numbers have gone up, haven't they?
Right. Yeah, it always seems that way.
A couple of weird things happened. First of all, it happened July 29th. They didn't bother telling us till a couple of days ago.
That's pretty common that there's a delay, right? Because they have to kind of, like, figure some things out behind the scenes before they go public with
it. Well, but wait a minute.
But this is a long time.
They have Social Security numbers. Yeah. Addresses, dates of birth, mother's maiden names, first names, last names,
driver's license. You've
ever bought. They know everything about you.
Literally, this is like wrapped up in a nice little bow, the hacker's toolkit of what anyone would need to steal your data or to be you, essentially.
And I understand we live in a world where hackers are, you know, like rats. They're everywhere.
Right.
But I think it's well known how to secure this stuff. And they didn't. They have a responsibility, the minute this stuff leaks out, to let you know. What they don't have a responsibility to do is go out and sell their stock before anybody else knows. Three executives at the company did so, including their chief financial officer. Equifax said, well, they didn't know about the breach.
That remains to be seen, right? There's going to be a lot of investigation into this because it's just the timing is just too...
Yeah. You notice their stock price went down 13% after this revelation. SEC will be the judge of that.
What is the repercussion in this situation? Because I feel like we're getting numb to the idea that our data is just out there.
Right.
It's always leaked. You know, if it's not one leak, it's another. Every single week, if not every single day, we're hearing about something new with multiple millions of pieces of information, different people. I mean, this is pretty staggering. And I think the value of this particular collection of data is probably more important than any data that has been leaked at this point. But
it's not by any means the largest.
How are they held accountable? Not the largest, but I mean,
but Dan Gooden said this on Ars Technica. It's easily the worst. Maybe you could say the Office of Personnel Management that had security checks and other things, fingerprints. This is as bad as it can get. And I think they had a responsibility to let us know as soon as they could because we're all affected.
Mm-hmm.
What they did do was worse. Not only did they try to bury it by releasing it on a Friday, but then, there you go,
picture.
Dan Gooden's article. I love that picture.
It's a great article. It's a great picture.
But they also put up a site, and I'm not going to give you the address of the site because I don't want you to go there. They put up a site that you could go to check to see if you were affected. Lies! The site, which I did and Lisa did, I went there and said, no, you weren't affected. More lies! Lisa did, and she said she was affected. But then Bruce Schneier, the security guru, mm-hmm. goes there and enters a random name and six random. They want six digits of your social, by the way, everything but the first three. He did it with a random number, random name. It said, yeah, you've been affected. What? And what do you do when you've been affected? They transfer you then to a free year of credit monitoring. 1 year only. By the way, this will go on for years, the impact of this. And I can guarantee you on day 366, you'll get a bill for $39.95 or something.
It'll auto-renew.
It is not. They are trying to make money on this.
Oh, so infuriating.
So don't go there because, first of all, don't go there. Don't give Equifax any more of your information.
Yeah.
It's apparently a bogus site. Maybe it's broken, whatever.
The site was weird. I mean, no matter how you slice it.
It looked like a phishing scam.
It really did. You went there, and there was not even anything on the page to give you the clue that, like, hey, we're reassuring you. We're taking this seriously. Please give us the information that we need to identify you. I went there, and at first I went there because there was a link on Twitter to it. And I was like, heck no, this is a phishing site.
In fact, Cisco's OpenDNS said this is a phishing site. They could not verify. I did the right thing, which is to check the certificate, and it still didn't say Equifax.
Weird.
And in the JavaScript code, security experts found in the JavaScript code, it had the name of the guy, the login name for the site. These people are inept. Do not give them even six more digits. And whatever you do, don't sign up for their credit monitoring. Here's what you should do. Here's what everybody should do. First of all, there's two things you want to do. You want to, of course, freeze your credit account or put a fraud alert on your account. You go to these reporting agencies, Equifax, Experian, TransUnion, Innovis. Go there. The least thing, the simplest thing, the free thing you can do is put a fraud alert on there. That means they will notify you if somebody asks for a credit report.
How long does that last?
It depends, no more than 3 months, which means every 3 months you're going to be going back there and renewing
it.
For a fee ranging from $10 to $30, you could put a freeze. That's permanent in most cases. I think in all cases it's permanent. But it really locks it up. And then if you're going to buy a house, you're going to rent an apartment, you're going to buy a car, going to get a credit card, you have a PIN number you have to give to the person and say, look, to get to my data, you need this. I think that's the right thing to do.
And so that's a one-time fee that locks down your account?
It's a one-time fee.
And then from that point on, it's protected by a PIN. Wow,
this could all change because these companies hate this because the way they make money, you ever get a free credit card offer in the mail?
Absolutely.
Like every freaking day?
Yeah.
That's Experian, Equifax, TransUnion, and Innovis making money. They sell that data to companies. So if you lock it down, they can no longer sell it. So it costs, they don't like it. So they're going to, I wouldn't be surprised if they change the rules. There's a massive class action lawsuit for, I think, $70 billion has already been filed. Several members of Congress have asked for an investigation. It turns out Equifax was lobbying Congress to change the rules protecting you. They didn't. This drives me nuts. This is, by the way, a bill that's currently in front of the Congress to kill the rule that protects victims of data breaches. Who? Us.
Yeah.
And and further, you know, they're trying to make money on this thing, which really I feel is offensive by this, you know. So you can get credit. By the way, just freezing your account is not enough. That will prevent somebody from using the information they got to get a new credit card. But you would also want to do some monitoring.
Right.
And there are many services that
offer
monitoring.
And not their monitoring.
And I would not use their monitoring. I don't want to go near them anymore.
You know, the beauty is we've all been breached in one way or another. And they all, at the end of that, end up saying, we're really sorry. Here, have a free year of monitoring.
Yeah,
so, you know, as long as we're continually
breached. You can do it forever.
We can do it for free forever.
Most financial institutions, many anyway, will offer some form of credit monitoring. My bank, USAA, does. I know that I've seen the Discover Card ads. If you have a Discover Card, they will do it. So check with financial institutions. See if you can get their monitoring. I wouldn't get more than one because you don't want to get overwhelmed with notifications because then you might start ignoring them.
Yeah, absolutely.
I use LifeLock. In fact, I immediately signed Lisa and her son Michael up. It's good to have kids in here because one of the things identity thieves often do is they will get a kid's social security number. They have fresh credit, and you can ruin a kid's life. So I use LifeLock. That's one of many services. They're very expensive. So, you know, I leave this up to you. I feel like I need the further protection that they offer plus the insurance because as a public figure, I figure I'm a target for some of these people. So do what you need to do, but I would check first with your financial institution, see if you can get any free credit monitoring. So two things to do, either a fraud alert or a freeze at the big four credit reporting agencies. And then, and by the way, another reason to do this, it'll cost them. It'll make them mad. So we should all do this because if everybody in the United States put a fraud alert on their credit, they'd be out of business.
Yeah.
They'd have no business.
Well, that's kind of been one of my questions all along with this, too, is that, like we've said, never to this degree, as far as I know anyways, has this amount of potent information and data on so many Americans been out in the public. At what point does something like a social security number need to be redevised or a new system built up around it because it's not performing the same, you know, function that it used to because it's not private anymore?
Well, you know, it's funny because the government always said, do not use this for identification. It says it on your social security card. And yet all of these guys use it for identification.
Right.
The reason it's bad, it's as bad as a fingerprint. It's almost as bad as a fingerprint. The reason a fingerprint's bad for identification is you can't change it.
Right.
So if it leaks out, what are you going to do?
Done.
You can go to the government and petition to have your social changed. They don't want to do it. You run the risk of losing track of your Social Security earnings because it's tied to your older number. So people don't want to change their social.
Right.
I'm not advocating you change your social. I think the best thing to do right now, stick it to the credit reporting agencies by putting a fraud alert or a credit freeze on. I'm going to go home tonight and do that. And I would suggest finding out if you can get credit monitoring from any source. The reason I use LifeLock, they own the back end for a lot of these transactions. So they kind of are always monitoring this anyway. When your Visa calls you and says, you know, hi, Mr. Howell, we noticed you bought 3 pairs of sneakers and two tank loads of gas yesterday.
I'm a big shoe fan, so that makes sense.
Was that you? That's in most cases from the company LifeLock owns that does that kind of monitoring.
Yeah.
So they're really tucked into it. As they point out, they can't monitor all transactions. They can't monitor cash transactions. Credit fraud happens sometimes in the dark web. But they do a very good job. They look at Pastebin. They will tell me if my email address, driver's license, mother's maiden name, social has been appeared in any of the dark websites. I think that's a really good service. So that's the one I use. But I'm not doing an ad for them. I'm not representing them in any way. In fact, my recommendation is see if you can get it for free first because LifeLock can cost a lot of money. Anyway, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to go on and on, but this is infuriating to me. It's infuriating these companies even exist. I've never liked them. And now that they did such, A, they didn't protect our data, and B, they're doing such a poor job now after the fact.
Right. And C, it remains to be seen how much their feet are going to be held to the fire, right? There's little regulation around this, yet data is such an important currency in the modern technological age. I mean, we're all passing around all of this information, all this data that's super private, and yet the companies that should be protecting this are not. What is the consequence there? There doesn't seem to be very much for that.
No, and I hope that the government will do something about this. I don't have high hopes, but I think that they ought to. The problem is that these companies spend millions of dollars every year lobbying members of Congress. Those are the people who never get anything but a slap on the wrist. Mm-hmm. We'll see. We'll see what happens. It's disappointing, to say the least. Welcome to the new age.
Yep.
Tuesday, big day.
Mm-hmm.
Megan Maroney Alex Lindsay and I will be in studio 10 in the morning on Tuesday. That's Pacific time, 1 p.m. Eastern time, 1700 UTC, Apple's big event. It's going to be at Apple Park. No, I didn't get an invitation. Thanks for asking. It's going to be at Apple, it's going to be at Apple Park. The brand new Steve Jobs Theater will be the first time anybody's been there. I'm really looking forward to seeing this video. I hope you'll watch with us. As you know, Apple streams it, and if you want the pure Apple stream, please watch their stream, because you know what we do. We sit behind the scenes and we do our little Mystery Science 3000. Yeah, we snark about it as it goes. But we're very interested. We'll see a new iPhone. Actually, we'll see three new iPhones. Did you see the leak?
I didn't. Well, so this posted very late, right before the show here. Apple iPhone X as the name.
So they've been looking at the leaked iOS 11 firmware. Now, take this with a grain of salt and so forth. But Tom Warren at The Verge is writing. He's very good. This comes from Stephen Troughton Smith. He's the guy who discovered the leak of the HomePod firmware and analyzed that. Now he's analyzed the iOS 11 leak, and he says, in that iOS 11 firmware, there are three new iPhone names. iPhone 8, that kind of makes sense. Okay. We're replacing the 7. It could have been the 7S. Mm-hmm. iPhone 8 Plus. And iPhone, is it X or 10? It is the 10th anniversary iPhone. I did not credit this, to be honest. I was sure it was going to be the iPhone Pro. But we'll find out on Tuesday. But according to this firmware leak, and Steve has a pretty good record. He's been analyzing these firmware leaks now for a couple of times. iPhone 8, 8 Plus, and iPhone, I'm going to think 10.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense with the 10th anniversary for some reason.
They don't even call it, I don't buy it. They don't call it Mac OS 10 even anymore. It's just Mac OS.
Yeah.
Why would they call it 10? They have an iMac Pro, a Mac Pro, a MacBook Pro, iPad Pro, iPhone Pro.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you think about the facial recognition opting to throw away the Touch ID? Or actually, I don't know if it was. I think they almost, from what I've read from Ming-Chi Kuo,
they had no choice.
They had no choice.
Yeah,
because it was a screen technology issue, so they had to get rid of Touch ID.
Oh, animated emoji too. Let's not forget.
Oh well, that's the most important.
Can't wait. So this
seems kind of not Apple to me to make a decision that critical.
Here's the problem.
Unless they chose to,
There were solutions, but here's the problem: they want to go bezel-less, right? They want to extend the screen as an iPhone 7 Plus.
They're all going
all the way around. Everybody, that's going to be any phone that has bezels will look so old-fashioned,
right? That's the premium marker right now.
And that means you lose the button, home button, which Apple has relied on ever since the iPhone first came out. But Google solved that. They have on-screen soft buttons. You could do that. This is also Touch ID. They originally, as you are alluding to, tried to make it something that would work through the screen.
Right.
Couldn't get it to work in time. So instead of doing what Google does, and by the way, your Essential phone also does this, putting a fingerprint reader on the back, Samsung puts it up next to the camera, iPhone doesn't want to do that. Maybe they just like that pristine back. Mm-hmm. So they're going to have, and I think this is potential, there's pros and cons on this. They're going to have face recognition. Now, the rumor is this face recognition will work even if the phone is there.
Right.
Once it knows your face, if you can see the phone can see you, it will unlock. I like that,
That's pretty sweet. Yep.
But a couple of problems. First of all, we know Samsung S8's face recognition was cracked almost immediately by the Chaos Computer Club in Berlin. They took a picture with a telephoto camera of a guy, put that picture, projected it onto a curved piece of paper, because these phones are trying to do it in 3D. And it unlocked the S8. And if this phone unlocks, if it sees anything that kind of looks like you...
Yeah. I mean, that's the big question that I have, is Apple is very known for coming sometimes late to technology, but being very purposeful about their implementation.
Exactly. That's right.
And if they had to get rid of Touch ID because of a technological issue, then it almost sounds like they were more or less forced to go all in with facial recognition. So you better believe it better work near 100% of the time. And if it doesn't, that's a huge mark.
And it doesn't get cracked.
Right.
The other thing to remember, and I was listening to This Week in Law on Friday with Denise Howell, and they talked a little bit about this, is that means law enforcement basically can unlock your phone by going, is this your phone?
Hey, yeah. Oh, man.
Thanks for unlocking
kidding.
That, Jason.
No kidding. I didn't even think about that.
Is this your phone? Yeah. So it's unlocked. So you no longer. So that means if you're worried about having a secure phone, you're going to want to turn off Oh, see, this is a simulation? This is what it will look like to set it up. If it's that easy to unlock it, you're going to want to have a passcode, and you're going to want to turn off face unlocking.
Yeah.
Because courts are kind of funny on this. Mm-hmm. There have been cases in both directions, but most courts hold that a password, something you have in your mind,
right,
is protected by the Fifth Amendment, by the right against self-incrimination, and by the Fourth Amendment, unlawful search and seizure. So most courts say that they can't force you to divulge your password. I have to point out, there is somebody who's been in jail for 2 years because he wouldn't unlock his hard drive for law enforcement. The court threw him in jail, and he's still in jail indefinitely. So even that may not work.
Hmm.
But there is somewhat more protection for a password than there is. Is this your face?
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty easy
Ding!
Access, at least.
What do you want? Anything.
Yeah, right.
Just most of us will opt for convenience over security, right? And so everybody will use it,
mm-hmm,
which means basically.
Especially if it works.
Yeah. And it will work.
Of the time, it'll be magical.
I can promise you it'll be magical.
Yeah.
What it means is basically phones are now unlocked.
Yep.
Just so you know. All right, we'll find out. We'll be doing our coverage again Tuesday, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, 1700 UTC. I hope you'll tune in for that. And then right after Mac Break Weekly around noon, Andy Iannocco, Alex Lindsay, Rene Ritchie probably won't be there. He's going to be at the event, and I'm thinking they're going to be a demo room, so he may not be available for Mac Break Weekly. And we'll start, as a result, security now about half an hour late on Tuesday. I'm looking forward to that. And then iOS Today is moving from Tuesday to Wednesday just for this week, so that because we didn't want to do an iOS Today before the announcement. So we're going to do it Wednesday morning at 9 a.m. Okay. I want to find out about this Essential phone, because you've had this for almost a week, and I'm very curious. We'll do that in a second. You're watching the new Screensavers. Thank you for being here. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. If you're buying a house, if you are refi-ing a house, I want to suggest you go to the number one lender in the country. By the way, never been affected by data breaches. I think Quicken Loans is a good place to trust. And Rocket Mortgage is made for us. Imagine doing the whole thing at an open house on your phone. On your phone. That's how Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans works. All you have to do is sign in to rocketmortgage.com/NSS. Answer a few questions. They'll say, is this you? They probably do get your credit reporting stuff. Of course, they have to. That's how that works, right? They'll match it up. They'll churn it. And within minutes, they will tell you, based on your income, assets, and credit, what loans you qualify for, let you choose, and you'll be approved. That is power. Because you've bought a house. You know what it is. When you go in looking at houses, if you go in pre-approved for a loan,
oh, yeah,
you've got to nowadays, because it's a seller's market.
Absolutely,
you're going up against somebody who's because I'll write a check. I'll write a check right now. Yeah. You gotta be pre-approved.
Bottle of wine is not enough.
No, I think I can get a loan. I feel pretty good. Here's a bottle of wine.
Yeah,
is this your phone? Quick, RocketMortgage.com/NSS, equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSConsumerAccess.org number 3030. To refi or to buy, I know maybe you're not doing it right this minute. I hope you're watching the show. But put a bookmark in there. RocketMortgage.com/NSS from the best lender in the country in Detroit, Quicken Loans, right? QuickenLoans.com. All right, Jason, you are our Android guru, the host of All About Android. For that reason and that reason alone, I said, Jason, this is yours to review. You're the expert. Besides, I'm getting the Note 8, the iPhone X, the Pixel 2. I don't need another phone.
Yeah, whatever.
How much was it? First of all, get your fingerprints off that phone.
Okay, so actually I have help. Michael Rosner saw how we needed gloves in order to handle this dang phone.
What did you do? You were wearing a black rubber glove from Father Robert.
That was Father Robert's doing. It was weird. I don't know if
these
this
are
is
better.
Any better.
This is what the Sotheby's auction house, when they're handling a Picasso, they will wear these cotton,
a little
white
little
cotton
Michael
gloves.
Jackson on you.
Yeah. or Mickey Mouse.
Okay. Oh, it actually also helps the display. So right. Thank you to Michael Rosner for sending me a 20-pack of white gloves.
Now, wait a minute. Just before you go too far, compare that to the iPhone size-wise.
Okay. So size-wise?
It's the same size screen, but look how much smaller it is.
I mean, it's kind of hard for me to
That's that bezel.
This angle.
Got to get some hands.
I know.
No, those gloves. But that's lack of bezel really makes a difference.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, that's one of the big qualities here with the Essential phone is that three of the four bezels, as you can see, top and the sides, are pretty
Look
much non-existent.
Wow.
The only bezel you really have is down at the bottom. So so you maximize the screen real estate, essentially, to the device. Not only that, the Essential phone, I feel really weird with the white glove on right now. The Essential phone has this really, I mean, a striking design, right? It almost looks piano black. It's basically
it's
titanium
on
the side. It kind of has a mirrored quality. This is ceramic on the back. Really shiny.
Okay, wait a minute. Is that a scratch?
There are, okay.
Did
so
you scratch my phone already?
Okay, down. That is, I don't know. Well, that might actually
That's
be a
scratch. That's a scratch, dude.
Yeah. So, okay. So this is ceramic, by the way, which essentially even points out on their website, like, you can't do anything to this, right? It's ceramic and titanium, which is total baloney.
It's
because
scratched
within
already.
An hour of having this phone and setting it on the table.
Wait a minute. I got to shine.
Yeah, get in there and buff it.
Just buff that up. It's going to, it'll buff right out. No, it's a scratch.
Is that a scratch?
It's not buffing out.
Okay.
Oh man, okay. I'm bummed.
Yeah.
I thought ceramic. Look at that. It's terrible looking.
So yeah,
that's
so
after 1 week.
This honestly, these scratches were here after like a couple of hours. You handed this to me before TNT, and during TNT we had it sitting on a table and showed it off a little bit. Well, at the end of TNT, I looked at it and there were those scratches on the back.
It could have been me because I did the same thing. I thought, oh, it's ceramic. It's titanium. I just put it on the table. I didn't put it in a case. Normally I would, I've already got my Galaxy Note 8 case.
Right.
But I just thought they said this is tough. You could drop it.
Yeah, right. Well, they say you can drop it up to, I think, 6 feet. And
please
it would
don't.
Survive. I'm not going to until maybe the end. I don't know.
Okay, at the end.
got a big old scratch on the front, but that's just Gorilla Glass.
No, wait a minute. That ain't no scratch. That's a crack, dude.
No, yeah, so we took a closer look
that's
on this.
That's a crack.
I'm going to defer to you, to your judgment.
Day one, that glass cracked.
And I'm telling you, I did nothing dangerous to these things.
No, it was not dropped.
Don't get me wrong. I have dropped my fair share of phones. I have broke my fair share
of phones. I'll cop to it. But that
but
was
definitely
not
this. I was taking care of this because the design is so striking that I was afraid to hold it because I don't want to drop it. Yet, even in taking really good care of it, stuff happened, and I don't even know how it does.
I'm
so,
wondering
anyway.
If that's a manufacturing defect, that maybe there's too much pressure on it or something, because we didn't drop it, but it is definitely, it's a crack. And the reason I say it's a crack, not a scratch, is it's deep.
It definitely goes deep, so I don't know what could have done that. But on the back, you do have the dual cameras, which, Essential is touting camera quality. And I have to say, does not live up to the promise on camera quality. The quality is okay. We've got a couple of image samples.
See, that
this was
good.
In studio. It looks all right with good lighting, right?
Yeah. I can even see Burke in the back.
Yeah.
It's a little grainy in the dark.
It's a little grainy back there and everything. It's whose leg? Oh, that must be Jammer B.
Recognize nice legs,
those socks
Jammer
anywhere.
B.
Yeah. And this was outside.
That is not a great shot. Look at the brightness at the top and the darkness at the bottom.
Dog hunting, and that was one dog we looked at. It's about, and actually, this is the 360-degree camera,
Ooh.
Which we'll talk about in a second.
Oh, okay.
It's really about performance. When you have a camera on your phone and you want to take a picture, you tap that shutter button and you want it to fire off. Regularly, you tap it and it's 2 to 3 seconds.
Yes.
And you're just waiting. Or you're tapping multiple times. You tap like 5 times and you're like, I just want to take a picture right now. And you get one picture out of it.
I had it. Actually, the first time I used it, I pressed too many buttons and too fast and it reset the phone. The whole phone went back to zero.
I had it
crash on me twice before I gave it to you. That was in the first 2 hours.
Yeah. So, and I have heard, not officially, but I've heard some people online saying Essential is going to be rolling out a software update.
This is fixable.
I do believe that the software issues are fixable. Yeah. I installed a modified version of Google's camera on here. And sure enough, it fires off pictures a lot more rapidly.
So you sideloaded the APK.
Yes.
And it's not available in the store.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Now, the other question I had, it has two lenses. Does it have, like the iPhone, a zoom button?
Mm-mm.
No.
No zoom.
You can only use one lens. One is black. It does have a monochrome mode, which I guess is the second lens. Take the
glove. Go away.
Fingerprints.
Fingerprints. It's a device. We're meant to fingerprint it.
Yeah. The black and white is nice. It has a monochrome mode. I'm thinking the second lens is monochrome, not zoom.
It's stuck in 360 degree mode, even though I don't have the module on. This is just a really bad camera app. but I mean, since it's in 360 mode, I guess I'll show you this.
You know, we saw a lot of reviews, but they were the pre-production unit, and I was hoping that, and I thought maybe that was one of the reasons this was so delayed. Ooh, that's neat.
So there's
two pogo plugs in the back, and that just snaps on with a magnet?
Yeah, so it snaps on with a magnet. There are two pogo plugs in the back. This is a 360-degree module. It's $50 if you buy it with the phone. It's $199 if you buy it by itself. Usually when I snap it, it goes into the camera mode automatically. It didn't this time, so I'm going to go ahead and take it off.
It's probably hung up.
Snap it on again, and hopefully it'll launch. A little
there
bit of a delay at launch. Now we got to wait a little bit until the feed comes through. So the pogo pins are only sending power.
Oh.
It's powering the device. And actually, inside this camera, you can hear a little fan whirring around when it's powered up.
That's weird, isn't it?
And so there's a little bit of lag, too, right? Like, I guess it's showing
there's a lot of lag. Yeah.
Because it's transferring data wirelessly through. So it's
Bluetooth?
Not... I believe it's, through Bluetooth.
What?
But it is a 360-degree camera, and that just kind of snaps on. This is like an example. We were at an event called Touch a Truck, where you get to see all sorts of big rigs and trucks.
That's not bad quality for a 360. That's
not too
bad.
You know, the seams were okay. Again, it came down to performance more than anything. It's like sometimes you'd snap this camera on, and it would automatically launch the camera. Sometimes I'd have to reboot the phone in order for it to recognize the 360-degree camera. Sometimes you press shutter and it doesn't take a picture and it locks up and you have
so
to like force it out and restart again. So there's software issues. Hopefully they can fix that.
How is it as a phone? It's a pretty pure Android.
It is very pure Android. That's one of Andy Rubin's priorities.
He invented Android.
Really tried to emphasize when he first announced this earlier this summer that it's pure Android. Yeah, and there's really not much modification at all. The only thing that I think is a real modification is the camera app because of the two dual cameras and the 360-degree camera.
Isn't that ironic? The one bit of software they had to do, they didn't do it.
They didn't do
very
well, yeah.
And do we know what the update policy is and all of that? Are they going to be...
I haven't heard anything about their update. I really hope that because it's Andy Rubin... that he holds that to, is very stringent.
It's not Oreo.
Update.
It's seven. It's not even 7.1.2. It's 7.1.1.
Right. And, you know, obviously it's going to get updated to Oreo. Oreo was announced right about the time that this started hitting people's, houses.
128 gigs of storage. That's the only way you can get it, right?
Yeah, it's pretty limited on upgradable options. 4 gigs of RAM, 128 gigs of storage, Snapdragon 835, so the most premium processor that you can get.
It did feel snappy to me. Did it seem snappy?
Yes, and I was just going to say, performance is really pretty great. Battery, I feel like I didn't have enough time with it to really judge its battery. I've read a lot of reviews that say the battery was so-so, not amazing. I wouldn't say that it was amazing in my time with it, but I would like to give it more time to really know.
It takes a while because it has to settle down.
Yeah.
I installed all my apps, got it up and running, and it was still at 90% battery. That's very unusual for me. My initial impression was this might have great battery life. It is a fairly big battery for that size phone. It's 30-40 milliamp hours.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yep.
What else? USB-C charging?
USB-C.
No headphone jack.
No, that's a really good point.
Ugh.
USB-C charging. It does come in the box with a little threaded USB-C to headphone adapter.
And I do have to say, I like the braided
at least
cables.
You have that.
It comes with a good braided cable.
Yeah.
Does not come with headphones, though, does it?
No, I did not see headphones.
Fast
in the
charger,
box.
Though. Very fast charger.
Yeah.
In fact, it was like 27-watt charger. It was a really high power charger.
Yeah. So, I mean, at least they give you the dongle for it so you aren't high and dry.
Yeah.
But
A-plus on the dongle.
Good work with
really
the dongle there, Essential.
But the phone...
I mean, I think overall, the overarching theme of this device in my time with it is that it's a decent start. that what they really focused on, the reason that you even get this phone is because it looks unique, right? Like the design, the kind of materials that they use are different enough. Like I pulled this out at an event earlier today, and the second I pulled it out, I had two people simultaneously go, whoa, what phone is that? That's cool. You know, like you get that response out of a device like this. But is that enough? I don't know if it necessarily is. I feel like the mods need work, and hopefully they're going to do more work on that. Andy Rubin has said he wants his mods to be interchangeable between all of their devices. So at least there's that. Oh, you're getting a call.
Yeah, let me turn. Is this your phone?
Oh. Answer. So if you're getting this, you're getting it because of the design, right?
Yeah.
And that's why you're spending the money. The modular ecosystem could eventually be good somewhere down the line. But the camera performance, I would rate as abysmal at this point. Hopefully they treat that well in software. Durability, I feel like, is an open question. Even though they're making it with these really durable materials, my short-term and very immediate experience went totally counter to that.
Terrible.
I haven't dropped it yet, and Leo, I'm not going to drop your phone, so don't worry.
Well, at this point, I don't really care.
Ultimately, it just kind of felt rushed, which is strange because they announced this early summer. Andy Rubin said, within 30 days, this is going to be hitting people's mailboxes. And then it took another 3 months of unresponsiveness, you know, while they worked to get it out and everything. Yet it still feels unfinished.
I can sympathize. You want it. But maybe they should have taken a little more time. Yeah. Or, well, what's your recommendation? Buy it?
I don't know that I automatically
recommend that you buy it.
I would say wait for a version two.
I would say do not buy it.
Yeah.
Absolutely not. I mean, the fact that we were able to scratch it and crack it in 24 hours.
Less.
12 hours
does not bode well for it.
It
was kind of crazy.
And from that point, handling.
From that point, I was scared to death of using it, putting it in my pocket, of putting it on the seat in my car as I drove. Like, I didn't know where to put it because I wasn't sure where the next scratch was going to come from. And that's weird considering the materials that this is made with.
And I don't think there are many cases out there, if any.
In fact, their website points out that you won't need a case because it's indestructible.
Yeah.
I mean, they specifically point that out. So I would say wait till version two. Yeah. It's an interesting start. I'm convinced they're going to have more to follow up with this because they've got a decent amount of funding at this point. And it's Andy Rubin. I guess I just expected more.
It's disappointing. I expected a lot.
Yeah.
I wanted to give him every benefit of the doubt. I think we both did.
Yeah.
It's very hard to say this, but this is not a phone you should
buy. It's not essential.
This is not your phone. especially timed as it is, coming out with all of these new top-of-the-line flagship phones.
Not a good time to come out with a phone that had a lot of steam, a lot of interest, but couldn't live up to it. If it totally lived up to its promises and blew people away, it would be right up there, right? Because it's a striking phone.
How much is it?
It's $699, I believe.
It is a little less expensive than the other flagship
phones.
That
used to be top-of-the-line cost, and now we're pushing $1,000 for like the Note 8 and stuff. So the levels are getting larger. Yeah. But I guess it's affordable when compared to the Note 8 and the possible upcoming iPhone X.
It looks so good, and it really does underscore why bezel-less design is really the future.
Yeah.
You do get that little notch at the top for the camera.
Yep.
Apple's is going to be even bigger if the prototypes are to be believed. But it just that makes it look good. This is a 5.7 inch screen, and it's a bigger screen than the iPhone 7 Plus in a much smaller form factor.
Yeah, the body is much smaller. It's really nice for that reason.
It feels good, but geez, if it's going to scratch and crack, I can't. What will that look like in 6 months? Right?
Yeah.
So sorry, but no buy. Coming up in just a second, we're going to answer a question. We got a call for help. We're going to fly the Mavic Pro in the studio, taking a chance of crashing it for the first time. Huh? Oh, I forgot. What about repairability? On the line with us right now, Kelsey Weber from iFixit.com. They also breakit.com, but that would be a bad name for a website, right?
We try not to. We really, really try not to create more e-waste in the process here. But yeah, we wanted more from this phone too, from a repairability standpoint. We were really bummed. If you read on the site, Andy Rubin says that he doesn't want you to feel the need to get a new phone every year. They want to give you some modular components to tack onto it so this phone evolves with you. But it's not going to evolve with you if you're going to break it on the first day and not be able to fix it. So we had a really hard time getting into this phone. I don't know if you saw on the teardown, we resorted to freezing it to get the adhesives to loosen up a bit. Normally, I mean, we take our time. We have teardown engineers that are very, very experienced. We take our time with this so that way we can explain the process of repair to people.
Whoa!
And we couldn't get into it without busting the screen.
Wow.
And so...
you tried that twice, didn't you? There was two different phones you tried to get
into. Yeah. So the first phone our teardown team got, and they're the ones that had to use the Super Cool on it. And then when we went in to do the teardown video the second time around, we didn't need the Super Cool, but we still damaged the screen in the process. There was some delamination between the LCD and the glass. And I've actually got the parts here for you if you want to take a look.
Sure.
So here's what... the phone would look like when you're closed. You got a good look at that. But these seams are really, like, nearly invisible. So if you were to crack this and try to, replace it yourself, when we went through, there's delamination between the glass and the LCD. We started getting some of those chips along the bottom that you saw on the top. It was a destructive process to then, get inside there for the phone. And I'll talk about what we found on the motherboard in here in a second. But yeah, it was just very, very disappointing.
Well,
I mean, not just very, very disappointing, like the lowest score that you could possibly give to a phone.
Really?
Right?
Well, we do give zero. Okay. We do give a very lowest score. But this was on par with the Surface Pro. If you have to destroy the phone in a sense to get inside, then...
the Surface laptop. You couldn't take that apart because the Alcantara... Yeah. You couldn't take that apart without ripping the Alcantara. You can't take this apart without breaking the screen.
Wow.
Yeah.
There's no screws?
No, so there are screws, and they had, like, general fasteners and things, but once you get the screws up, there's still just tons and tons of adhesive. And so it's just so when you get inside too, the lack of repairability, essentially didn't stop. We get down to the motherboard, and so the phone joined the dongle revolution, right? So your USB-C port is now an audio jack and a charging cable, and it's going to get a lot more wear and tear. And this jack is soldered to the motherboard, which is one giant piece, which makes up most of the cost of the phone. So if you were to say mess up this port and need to go in and fix it, first, you're going to break the screen in the process to get inside, and then you're either going to need to pay for a micro soldering job or an entire new board in order, to replace it. And at that point, it's not financially worth it for the consumer. So if they're really thinking about the consumer and wanting this phone to last, then they would have thought about that in the design. So, like you said, you're getting this phone for the look of it on the outside, but they didn't really think about repairability when it came to the inside of the phone.
This is extremely disappointing. Do they even offer parts? I mean, is there any way do they have repairs? How can you get this fixed?
I mean, and it depends on, I'm not sure what insurance or whatever they're going to be able to provide. We would love to be able to offer parts to people for repairability, because some people, might opt in or out of an insurance plan, or once this phone is out of warranty, people are going to be out of luck. And if you are, if you go try to fix it yourself, it's going to be very costly.
Right.
Especially on the battery side of things, right? Like, I know from my own experience that Android devices, after about a couple of years, they might still have life in them, except for the fact that the battery just can't do what it used to be able to do. So, the solution then is to replace the battery. But if in doing so, you're also destroying the screen and taking a whole lot of other chances along the way, I mean, it's basically a two-year phone.
Yeah, and credit where credit is due, though. Once you got in, we did see stretch adhesive underneath the battery. So if this was a phone that you could get into, you could easily replace the battery.
Okay.
So there were some of those components, of repairability that we were looking for, but it doesn't really matter if you can't get into the phone.
Right.
So, yeah, major bummer for us.
Yeah.
But this is why we do this. We're not here to shake the finger and say, you're bad at designing phones. Stop. Don't ever do it again. again, this teardown is to inform consumers and to inform designers and manufacturers that this isn't what's best for the consumer, and it's not what we want. And we expect something that is going to last longer if we're going to pay $700 for it. So that's what we're here for. We hope that, you know, the next iteration of the phone will be more repairable, and hopefully they hear our cries, because we want to help. We want to help with developing sustainable design.
Kelsey, thank you so much. iFixit.com. It's the repair manual for the technical world. You get everything there, from parts for your McDonald's Happy Meals to the latest phones and, of course, tools, great tools, too. And we should give you a disclaimer. You are a sponsor of many of our shows, and we are appreciative of that. Thank you, Kelsey. It's great to talk to you.
Thank you, Kelsey.
Thanks for having me.
Man, this just breaks my heart, because it is beautiful, right?
It really is
nice. Really, you want to love this phone.
Yeah.
And I have so much respect for Andy, and yet we can't. We have to be honest. Look at that. That's not a scratch, folks. That's a crack. We have to be honest. This is not the phone to get.
And
too bad. Although, if you don't mind, I'd like to take it back. Do you want to keep it?
No. Go for it. You can have it. Here.
I'd like to carry it.
You can have
around.
All this, too.
It's really pretty. Thanks for the dongles. Is this your phone? All right. We'll have our question, our caller of the day in just a little bit, a call for help. We'll also fly the Mavic, and we'll cook with a Tovala. But first, a word from our sponsor, Hover.com. I get come-ons all the time in registered domain names, and I just laugh, ha-ha, and say, no, I'm going to Hover.com. Hover's the best. Hover is where all my domains live. I had to move them because I, like everybody, like you probably, was using other registrars. Registrars that made you go through page after page of upsell before you could buy a domain name. Or, you know, would undercharge, but by the time you're through, you're paying through the roof. Or a registrar that just didn't care about you. Hover is fantastic. They just sell domain names and mail. That's it. So you don't have to worry about a big upsell. For instance, one of the things you get at Hover.com automatically on domains that allow it is Whois privacy. That's included in the price. There's no, do you want to be private? You don't have to check a box. The interface is easy. You see all the sites that you can easily connect with, but the DNS management portal is the easiest I've ever used. And I'm constantly hooking up my Hover domain names to different sites, trying out stuff. I love Hover, and boy, do they have the domain names. Over 400 extensions, everything from .pizza to .ninja to .com to .net. It is great. And if you do need support, look at them, to everything. If you do need support, they've got the best in-class customer support team, and their no-hold policy means you're going to get help right away. They're not going to put you on hold. They're not going to put you off. They're going to get your problem solved. Hover.com/twit. And you'll get 10% off your first purchase. It's the domain registrar of choice. When Steve Gibson decided he wanted to move off the old domain registrar he'd been using for a decade, he asked on Twitter. And, of course, Twitter told him, Hover.com. It's the best. Hover.com/twit. Save 10% off your first purchase. We thank him for their support of the new screensavers. And now it's time. We've got all Android questions for you today.
Excellent.
For a call for help. All right, we recorded this one earlier. Tom from Los Angeles.
Hi, guys. I was watching All About Android last night, and Jason said, send your questions to new screensavers. So here goes. I have the download and install Oreo notification, and then I read about a massive cellular data leak. So my question is there really a massive data leak? And if there is, has it been patched before I download this thing? Thanks for all you do. Bye.
I love his T-shirt.
Yeah.
Some days it's not even worth chewing through the restraints. Okay, Tom, whatever you say. So what is he talking about?
So some people are complaining of an issue that's appearing in stock builds of Oreo that essentially is resulting in folks who believe that they are connected to Wi-Fi
And say they go to watch a bunch of YouTube videos, right? And they expect that data to be channeling through Wi-Fi and bypassing their mobile data. But instead, they go back and look later, or they get a notification from their carrier that says that they've used all of this data through the mobile carrier instead of through Wi-Fi, even though they had Wi-Fi active. And, like, what's going on? It should always opt, and it always has opted, for Wi-Fi over mobile data if Wi-Fi is available and if Wi-Fi is strong. And it turns out, I haven't experienced this personally, but there are enough people complaining about this on different devices that are getting the Oreo update or manually flashing and upgrading to Oreo that are seeing this. And when they go into the developer settings on their phone, by the way, the developer settings menu is a hidden menu. You only get to it if you go into the settings in your phone, find the build number for your device, and then tap it a bunch
of
times.
Let's do this on the essential, because I bet you don't have... You have to unlock it, but I bet you don't have developer mode.
I don't. So let's see here. What is the best camera for this?
Here, do it for Jerry. He's right there.
Okay. Let's see here, Jerry. Okay.
So first you go into settings.
So we'll go like this.
This is not Oreo, but
yeah, right. But if I go to About Phone. And then I'll find the build number.
That's the key, is that build number. And you tap it how many, 9, 10 times?
Yeah, it was about 5 or 7.
It'll say, you're about to turn on a developer. And once you do, now what?
Okay. Now, when I go back out to my main settings menu, sorry, it's hard to do this sideways, I have a new option in here.
Developer options.
All right. And if I go in there.
I can show this on my phone now. So that's how you turn it on.
Tons of stuff in there that you never saw before.
When I heard this question, I checked immediately. And this is my phone in the current usage cycle in the last 3 weeks. And 12.7 gigs of Wi-Fi data, 1.8 gigs of mobile data.
So
that's about right,
right? Yeah, you're looking all right.
But let's go in here. And now that I have I followed your procedure and I've got developer mode turned on. And this is Oreo, by the way, right now.
Okay.
So where do I go? System?
So, let's see here.
Developer options.
And then you are looking for a setting called Mobile Data Always Active. And what's happening here...
I should point out, I have not changed these settings at all, and it's on for me.
Okay, and this is different. In previous versions, this has been toggled to off by default. And again, this is in a hidden menu, so most people would never see this. They would not know to do this. And normally it's been toggled off, but a lot of people that are updating to Oreo, be it manually or automatically with an OTA update, are seeing this as toggled on.
So let's explain what this does. What it is, basically, is you're in Wi-Fi mode, but to improve performance, oops, let me take this off. To improve performance, it may also use cellular data. In other words, use both Wi-Fi and cellular data.
Yeah, I mean, essentially what it, yes. And I wonder if it kind of has something to do with Project Fi also about how it's automatically hopping between things to get
it could,
better connection.
And this is a Fi phone?
Yeah.
But I see it on Samsung phones as well. It's considered to be an advantage. Like it says on the Samsung phone something like improve performance by using mobile data along with Wi-Fi when necessary. So that would potentially, you're sitting here, you're at home, you're watching YouTube on your phone, you may be using cellular data without knowing. So you can turn this off here.
So you can turn that off, and I'm guessing if you turn that off, that's going to address the problem. So if you are worried about updating Oreo for this feature, know that there is an option in settings that if you dig a little bit, you can get to, and you can toggle that off. That toggling it off is the way it has been up until Oreo. Google has said that they realize there is an issue. They're working to address it. I am very confident that Google is going to push out with whatever the next security update is, or flash an OTA update that addresses this pretty soon. They have acknowledged it. They know that it exists. So
yeah. And I have to say, I have that on my Samsung. I also turn it off on the Samsung. And it's not hidden in developer options. It's like a feature.
Oh, it's just normally
that. It's a normal feature. And I do turn it off because I don't want to use cellular bandwidth.
Right.
That's the reason I'm on Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Because I have unlimited free Wi-Fi. I've already paid for it.
Right. And so, a lot of people don't have unlimited data through their carrier.
Right.
And so you do this. Suddenly you've blasted through all of your data allotment.
Easy.
It's expensive.
It's easy.
Suddenly they start charging you per gig beyond that. It can really add up. So it's worth knowing that it does exist for some people, and that you can do something about it.
It's also on iOS, of all things. It's called Wi-Fi Assist, and I'm not sure where it is. Let me search for Wi-Fi Assist in the settings here. And the idea, I guess, for the iPhone is same thing. It will make things faster because Wi-Fi will have I guess Wi-Fi is turned off, so let me turn on Wi-Fi. Join Wi-Fi. Well, I'm not sure. I think I'm on the Wi-Fi. Okay, but I don't see it now. But I do think Wi-Fi Assist is the same idea to speed up downloads when you're on Wi-Fi only. Well, see, I'm not seeing it here. But I do remember seeing it on the iPhone. So
yeah, stay connected to the internet even if you have a poor Wi-Fi connection.
That's it.
Yep.
See? So it's getting it from both sides.
Yeah, absolutely the same thing here. And I don't know, you know, it's
that's a
possible.
Feature.
It is a feature. It's possible that it's possible that some of the behavior might be off as well. Perhaps, and I don't know if this is what's happening, but perhaps it's opting to not transfer data through Wi-Fi, even if the Wi-Fi connection is strong, and is just opting to throw it all through your mobile data. I don't know if that's what's going on here, if in fact these people that are complaining didn't realize that their Wi-Fi connection just wasn't very good.
It'd be very easy to miss it on your iPhone because it's in cellular settings, cellular, and then you have to scroll all the way through every application, and at the very bottom, automatically use cellular data when Wi-Fi connectivity is poor. Now, the good thing is it tells you how much cellular data you've used. In this case, only 174 kilobytes.
Okay.
So in this case, I'm not too worried about it. I'm going to leave that on. Mm-hmm. But that's another one you might want to check. And it's, by the way, a good hint to reset your statistics every month on your iPhone so you can keep an eye on what's using cellular data, especially if you have teenagers using up all your bandwidth. Hey, Tom, thank you. Good question.
Thank you.
And thank you. It's good that we have Jason Howell here, host of All About Android and our Android expert. Next week, I'm on vacation.
Yep.
Padre is going to fill in, and joining him, Patrick Norton. If you have questions for Padre or Patrick Norton, between the two of them, there ain't much they can't answer. Here's how you ask.
Need tech help? The new screensavers are here with answers. Email your tech questions to newscreensavers@twit.tv.
All right, I'm going to get ready to fly my Mavic Pro drone in just a moment. Before we do, let's find out how Megan Maroney liked her Tovala oven. Let's get cooking.
I don't like to cook. I'm not very good at it. I'm a mom, and people think that means that I should be good at cooking, but I'm not. But I also like when my family all eats together and eats good food. I've tried the subscription services, and I have to admit, they're still a little bit too difficult for me. Even though all the directions are there, sometimes I don't even have that much time. So when I heard about the Wi-Fi connected Tovala oven, I got very excited. Now, a lot of people will instantly make fun of this oven and say, why do you need a toaster that's connected to the internet? It is so much more than that. It's, first of all, it's just a really good oven. It doesn't only just toast. It also bakes and broils. It uses steam, so it's what's called a combination oven or a combi oven. It also is a meal service, so you can order meal plans that come, but they're way easier than the subscription service. It comes fresh. It's not frozen. Everything is already cut and chopped. Today, we're going to try the miso glazed salmon. All the directions are here down to the remove the plastic film on both trays. You spread the miso glaze on top and then the sides. You just need a spoon to spread it around. Then you pour the lemon juice that is already squeezed for you and mixed with oil. You pour that on top of the broccoli. Then you just put the trays in the oven. You have to make sure that it's filled with water, this little canister here, because that's how you make the steam. So all of the meals have this handy little barcode on it. It also has all the calorie count and all the ingredients are here. So you just hold it under the oven, scan it, puts the time in there, and then you just press the button to start it. And then you wait. When it's ready, you'll get an alert on your iPhone or on your Apple Watch or on your Android phone. Then you take out the food and follow the rest of the directions, which are pretty easy. Then you get to eat it. You can also make a lot of regular foods. You can make regular recipes or specific items. We are going to make Brussels sprouts. I have a huge problem making Brussels sprouts. They're always too burnt or too soggy. So I am hoping that the Tovala can help us out. We prepared these first with a little olive oil, a little salt, a little pepper. And all those directions, by the way, are in the app. Then all you have to do is choose Brussels sprouts, tap cook it. Then you just press the button to start. Got the alert. It's ready to go. See how we did. They look pretty good. Crunchy. The oven costs $400. The meals themselves cost $12 a meal. You can fit four of the meals in the oven at once. it's very easy to make fun of all of the Internet of Things, our Wi-Fi toasters, our Wi-Fi ovens. When I had this at home, a lot of people who came over and saw it said, why do you need that connected to Wi-Fi? Well, you don't need it connected to Wi-Fi, but it's easier. It's nice to be able to put something in the oven, press a button, not have to search around to figure out how long do you cook chicken? How long do you cook salmon? How long do you cook Brussels sprouts? You just press a button. Someone's done all that work for you. Then you go upstairs, read a book, fold the laundry, check Twitter, and then you get an alert. A lot of people also ask me, well, what if your Wi-Fi goes out? You can't cook anything? No, you can still use the oven to cook, even if it's not connected to Wi-Fi. You just have to figure out how long to cook things. The packaging is smart. It's recyclable or reusable. There's just a lot less packaging than I've seen in some subscription services. It looks kind of like a TV dinner, but it tastes really good. These are gourmet meals. These tasted like food you get in a restaurant. Same with the food that we cooked ourselves. Those Brussels sprouts were great. It made me want to cook more nutritious meals. It made me want to eat healthier. Here are the cons. It is kind of big, but not quite big enough to replace your oven. It doesn't fit a full-size cookie sheet. And also, because it has steam, you need to have an area in your kitchen that fits where the steam won't get in all into your cabinets and warp the wood. So for my kitchen, I couldn't really find a place for it except for in the middle of the kitchen island. And I have a pretty large kitchen. But if you live in a small apartment and you don't have a toaster oven and you don't have any other oven, this is a good choice for you. If you love cooking and chopping and preparing and going to the grocery store, if that is your thing, then probably this isn't an oven for you either. But if you are busy and you'd rather be reading or hanging out with friends or talking to your kids than cooking and chopping garlic and squeezing your own lemons, then I would say definitely give the Tovala a try. It's available on their website.
Thank you, Megan Murray. Actually, I talk with my friends while I'm cooking. Mm. It's a very social activity.
That kind of looks like the future.
That?
Not saying that I want it, because I enjoy cooking. My wife and I love to cook.
Yeah, it's fun. I saw your Blue Apron video. That looked like you were having a good time.
No, we cook all the time. We probably cook like 4 or 5 meals
a week.
I
like to cook,
And the other two we keep easy. But
I have to say the food was good.
That's the thing, right? Like I expected kind of like, it's easy, microwavable, style or quality. But that looked really good. But,
and that's the thing. I think sometimes if you don't want to cook, what's your other option? You get a microwavable meal or you go out to eat. And neither of those are really as good. So maybe this is a nice halfway.
I guess what I mean by the future is in the future, they have the little packet and you put it in the box and you go beep, beep, and then it comes out
Bruce
and it's like
this
bountiful, feast.
Yeah. He also smoked a cigarette that was all filter, but that's another story for another day. So Reverend Dan pointed out one more option in the developer options that you may want to check. Mine was off by default, but right above mobile data always active is aggressive Wi-Fi to mobile handover.
Oh.
And that one says, when enabled, and I just enabled it, Wi-Fi will be more aggressive in handing over the data connection to mobile when the Wi-Fi signal is low. That might be another one.
Yeah,
go in those developer options. Mess with them. What could possibly go wrong?
It's not like they hide those options for a reason.
Yeah. All right, I am going to do something crazy because my record with drones is very, very poor. The first drone I got, Father Robert, our quad father, said, get a cheap one. You'll crash it. So I got a $40 SEMA drone on Amazon. Yeah. He was right. I crashed it. I didn't even get to fly it more than once. The very first thing I did, I charged up the batteries. I charged up the remote. I put the SEMA out in the backyard. No trees, nothing, right? Out, put it on the ground. And I said, this is exciting. I pressed the forward button. That means it goes up. And then it went up. And so I said, oh, good, let's go down.
And then
it went up higher. And I said, down. It disappeared. It was like a balloon that you let go, and I never saw it again. It was a speck, and I could be anywhere. And fortunately, it was small and light. I don't think it hurt anybody landing. But that is something to be aware of, right? Yeah. Next drone I got, they said, you can't crash it. It was from a Parrot AR, the Bebop.
Okay,
crashed it. First thing, right into the hillside. Now, when I put it on the ground and say go up, it goes over like that. That's all it does, over. So I'm going to give that to Robert and say fix it and give it to somebody who needs it. This is the one. Alex Lindsay said to get it. DJI has been making drones for a long time. In fact, our first drone at the studio was a DJI Phantom. We got great results. But they've been making them for so long. I feel like we're in the fifth generation now of drones.
DJI is kind of the top of the heap.
The top of the heap. They make more expensive drones. This one's not cheap. The base model of the Mavic Pro, that's what we're going to show you today, is $1,000. The new Mavic Pro Platinum will be $100 more. You get a few more minutes of battery. you get a little bit quieter operation, but otherwise no change, the Platinum. I got the Fly More combo you see there. That's $12.99. What do you get for your extra $300? You get more batteries. You get three batteries instead of just one. You get some additional parts. You get this nice, convenient over-the-shoulder carrying case. And this is the amazing thing. This is a full-size drone.
I can't believe that
fits in here. So one of the things about the Mavic School is it folds up. So I'm going to show you that. This is also the remote control. And by the way, you use an iPhone or an Android phone. I've got extra batteries in here. I've got extra wings. I've got a lot more to it. The Mavic comes with some additional things that I couldn't figure out. Someday I will. I don't know what this does, but there it is. Anyway, you got all that stuff. Now, let me show you how you unfold the drone. The first thing you got to remember to do is this is the camera here. It comes with a cover. And every single time I would launch this thing and it would go, nah, you left the cover on, you moron. That is to protect it.
While it's packed.
While it's packed. Take that off, okay? All right. But this is nice. This is on a gimbal. It's a great camera capable of high-resolution photos and 4K video. And the thing is, it's automated, so it moves around. You can pan, tilt, and zoom it from the remote. Notice I also put my FAA number on here. The FAA does not, according to my latest research, according to a court order, is no longer requiring registration, but I strongly suggest it. When you register, it costs $10. One of the things they'll do is say, read these rules and follow them. Mm-hmm. Don't fly over people. Don't, you know, because if it falls out of the sky, this is heavy enough.
Yeah, I was going to say, how heavy is that? Yeah, that would not feel good.
Don't fly near airports or stadiums. And in fact, one of the great things about DJI is they have a database built into the drone that keeps it away from illegal places in the United States.
So even if you wanted to fly it over the White House,
it won't go there. Yeah. Exactly right. And that was, you know, they had to do that. Right. I also put my phone number on here because I know the day will come that I will lose this drone. And that day will be a very sad day because not only did I spend a lot of money, but I love this thing. Let me show you how you unfold it. The wings come out like this, and then these wings fold out like this. This is the battery right here. It pops out very easily. You get about 27 minutes of flight on that battery. And as I said, with the Fly More combo, you get three of those.
Oh, that's
more than enough. They charge up fast, too. In a couple of hours, you can charge them up. So it comes with a nice charger that gives you the chance to charge up to four batteries at one time. This also charges off of the charger, so you get the remote control in the charger as well. Inside here, there is a flap for a micro SD card. I put a 32 gig card in there. That's plenty for most of the flying you'll do. It comes with a smaller 8 gig card, so you might want to get a slightly bigger
card. That's
for
storing all the 4K
That's for
video.
The video and the photos. It stores them locally. All right. Now, I'll show you how the remote control works. I like this remote control. It's wireless. They claim a range of 4 miles.
Wow.
Now, the FAA also says don't lose sight of your drone. If it were 4 miles away, I think I wouldn't be able to see it. So maybe you don't want to fly it 4 miles away. It also has a very important feature to me. When the drone first turns on, it turns on GPS. It's built into the drone. Mm-hmm. And it figures out exactly where it is and what altitude. And it sets that as its home point. If the battery starts dying while it's flying, if you lose track of it, or if you press the home button on the remote control, it will come home and land itself.
So at that point, has it come up with an estimate as far as how far it's traveled and how much battery
you can see that? You know, that's a good question. I have to say, I am just a beginner with this. In fact, it's still in beginner mode for me because this is the most complicated user interface ever. And you'll see part of it is on the controller, but part of it is on the phone. And there's a lot of features, including battery life, how far it's flown, GPS location, signal strength. There's a ton of stuff on there. So you see the iPhone fits in
just put your
quite
right
nicely.
In
and actually, that's a great assist. It has a little plug here. You can change the plug to me, USB, micro USB or Lightning. They say that Type-C is coming. But right now, I'm using the iPhone. I'm going to turn this on. This is fully charged, and I'm going to launch the DJI Go 4 app. And then I'm going to turn on the drone. Shall we turn it on? I was able to. This has so many modes. And I'll show. Well, wait a minute. Let's show the video before I turn it on. He's getting farther and farther away. Let's show some of the video. This 4K camera looks great. This is the first time I flew it. I took it out to a Frisbee golf course and took out. This was a cloudy day, but I thought that the picture was stunning, and it's easy to fly. I did not find it difficult to figure out forward, back, up, and down. It has a lot of very interesting modes, too. We'll show you in a second. But look how rock solid.
My goodness.
There's even a cinema mode that will even be more steady. It's kind of a steady cam mode where it doesn't respond as quickly, but it does keep a more stable platform.
Yeah.
But you see how smooth this is. This is like a crane shot. You feel like you have a photographer built into this drone.
You feel like you are Hollywood.
Yeah. I mean, this is my neighborhood. I'm spying on my neighbors. This is also another issue, of course, privacy.
Yes.
FCC does mention, you know, don't be peeping in the windows of your neighbors, the FAA. So I want to respect those rules. I mean, first of all, this is a great hobby. It's a lot of fun. And for somebody who's shooting video, this is really great. I've seen people like Trey Ratcliffe, Ant Pruitt do some amazing stuff with their drones. Yeah. The drone is floating in the air like a tripod. Now this is in the, don't laugh at me. This is,
are you running away from the drone?
Don't judge me. This drone is, I'm not controlling this drone. I put it in follow mode it's automatically following me as I move. Imagine this if you're a skateboarder or a skier or water sports.
Oh, man.
It would follow you. There's several different follow modes. There's a spotlight mode where you pilot the drone. Watch, I almost lost it. And as you can see, I went up immediately a little bit higher. I am in beginner mode, so it'll only go up a couple of hundred feet to stay out of the flight lanes.
Well, no, wait a minute. So it was following you there, but it had no idea that the tree was in its path.
That's one problem. It does have collision detection, but it's only in front.
Ah,
so it does warn you.
This is
profile mode where it stays on the side. Yeah. This is maybe spotlight mode where, if it's spotlight mode, you control it, but it will continue to follow. And it has, this is recognition. So you say, recognize this, follow that.
And is it locked onto the controller that's in your hand,
It's doing recognition, body recognition.
Oh,
so
if
it recognizes a human, you could say that human, or you could draw a rectangle around it and say, that 4x4, follow that thing.
Wow.
This is our house. We're coming down. I'm trying to do one of those great videos where you see all the time on Instagram where somebody's got the drone and it takes... This is me trying to get away from the drone. It's very smart. Here, this is Michael on a Segway. I had it in follow mode, and you could see how much fun this would be to make.
Yeah.
There's no... I'm not piloting this. It's piloting itself. Kind of scared Michael, so I backed it off. You can take control immediately if it's in one of these automated modes. There are so many modes. I did not use them all. I mean, it really is amazing what you can do with this thing. And look how good that video quality is. So let me turn it on, and we'll see if we can take off here. It won't, in fact, hit anything as long as that thing is in front of it. It will also, and you're going to hear this in a second, it's going to sound an alarm because we're very close to it. And that's good. That's exactly what you want it to do. Notice I didn't unfold the wings. Thanks to the magic of centrifugal force, it will automatically unfold
itself.
I'm
a little nervous. I'm not gonna lie.
Now, stand back, Jason, because I don't want to hear you, but she hurt you. But let me just... Now, I don't know what the heck mode is going on here. I seem to be seeing a picture of myself in this. Oh, it's still initializing. Oh, I see. It's looking at the monitor. No wonder I'm seeing a picture of myself. That was very confusing. That was extremely... I couldn't understand what was going on. So it's still initializing. It's probably trying to get a GPS lock here. So this is the view out of the camera, but you see all these controls, which show us the camera controls. I have settings here that I can use. It may not let me do this right now because it's still trying to initialize. In fact, we may have trouble initializing in the studio because I don't think it's going to get GPS. It has automated takeoff, automatic landing. You can put it in the different modes here. I can switch between video and still mode. Let's go back into video mode. And I have full control of all the settings. It's fully manual if I want. And you see that that's a good idea. I also can steer the camera. There's a bunch of extra knobs. Here's a video shooting knob, a camera knob. This allows me to tilt the picture up and down on the gimbal. And this is changing the exposure. This is a exposure mode. So it's in, it's not, I don't think it's getting GPS. Should I just try flying it anyway?
Okay.
What the hell? Let's see if I can turn it on. Yeah, see, it's not going to let me turn it on. It's smart.
So it will not.
It's smart.
And it's doing that because there are places that it's not allowed to go.
Yeah, it's still initializing. Yeah.
If we can't get a GPS signal, then we don't know you're in fact flying.
That was one interesting thing. It knew, and I don't know, it said in my house that it knew that there was an unpaved airport nearby and said, exert caution. It wasn't a preventative from flying. If I brought it closer to the airport, it would have prevented it. But it said, just you know, watch out. Okay, now it says ready to go. Shall we? Can we start it?
Okay.
All right. Let's see. Hold on. Hold your hat. Now, yeah, I've never done this here. Okay. Now it's just spinning.
Okay.
You hear that alarm?
Yes.
That's because I'm too close, and it may stay on, but we can still take off. Let me just go up a little bit. Okay, I crashed it. So there you go.
Jerry, at least you had a camera in your hands.
Jerry, are you okay? All right.
I'm fine.
So I don't know why it did that, but let's just pretend that didn't happen.
Are you okay, little buddy? Oh, boy. Well, that
went
well. It
didn't take too long to crash it, but I think it's okay. Thank you for dodging.
Yeah.
All right.
Did we get that?
Okay. Don't fly it inside, okay? That would be rule number one. In fact, the first time I was really cautious. I went where there were no trees, no people, but that was kind of fun. You saw the video.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
I got a little bit more bold, did it by my house where there are a few more trees. I think that qualifies as a close encounter.
Yes, of the drone kind. Yeah.
But not a crash, okay? Jerry used to have a lot of hair. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what happened.
I don't know what happened there.
That was quick.
Wow. I'll charge you for the haircut later. So many features. There's too many to talk about. The camera resolution is 12 megapixels. The video resolution is 4K. It's a three-axis gimbal. Top speed. Ready for this? 40 miles an hour.
It has
It has a performance mode and a sport mode. The sport mode doesn't have any collision avoidance. Maybe that's what was going on. I don't know. The idea of the sport mode, though, is that you can race it. And they even offer a VR helmet that you can use
while
you're racing it.
That's like, yeah.
It's so awesome. You can control it from as far as 4.3 miles. The flight time, as I mentioned, 27 minutes. It is easy to fly. You can both tap fly it with the screen. And I'm in a warning zone, so fly with caution here, it says. So I can fly it with the screen, or I can fly it as I would prefer, and I think most people would, with the joysticks. And if you've ever done remote control, it's very straightforward. Forwards up, backwards down. You can rotate left and right. This will slew left and right, and this will go fat forward and backward. And so it's fairly easy to fly. Battery life on the remote control, by the way, is very long, so you don't ever have to worry.
What are we hearing right now? Is that just a fan?
That's a fan, because these things get really hot.
I will say, for the short amount of time that it was flying,
it was very steady. I don't know what I don't know what happened.
It was not very loud.
There.
Like, I've heard some drones be crazy
Should
loud.
I try it one more time? All right, I'm not going to fly it.
Yes.
I'm not going to fly it. I'm just going to turn it on so you can hear how loud it is.
Take off.
It says taking off. Yeah, Jerry moved, notice. In fact, I might, too. I don't know if I... Why do you think it went sideways like that?
Yeah.
You okay?
It's not that loud.
Hey, you landed it!
All right, I took off and landed. There, I just proved I could do it. Oh, my God, that was scary. It has flight autonomy technology, active track control modes. It has a variety of modes, including trace, so you can trace the outline of where you want it to go on a map. It'll follow that. You can do profile mode sideways. You can do spotlight mode. That's spotlight mode where you rotate around somebody.
Oh, it just spins around somebody?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
It is just incredible.
Hey, okay, how much?
So the drone itself is $1,000, but I would recommend for $300 more the Fly More combo that DJI offers. That includes extra batteries, extra blades, which you can see you may need.
Yeah.
In fact, this blade looks a little bit crazy here. I don't know if I screwed it up. No, I guess that's all right. And also a few extra little features like a hub charger and so forth. I think it's worth it. Plus that great case that you can carry it around in.
Dang, that is a nice
Isn't it? It's pretty cool. All right, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to get your mailbag in just a second. But first, Megan and Padre from Know How. They've got some great projects you can do with those old remote controls you got just lying around.
This is an infrared remote control. This little magic wand of technology can control pretty much everything, from TVs to lights to entertainment centers, pretty much all the things that make tech life interesting. But chances are that you've got a few of these lying at the bottom of your gadget box just taking up space. You could toss them, or you could leave them in the box for eventual tossing. But what if I told you that you could repurpose your old IR remotes to control pretty much anything in your home or office that runs on electricity, and that you could do it for under $10. Our little hack requires a few items: an infrared remote control, any Arduino, a 38 kilohertz 1838 IR receiver diode, and an Arduino-controlled relay. The first thing we need to do is to connect the IR receiver to our Arduino. Since it uses 5 volts, powering it is as simple as drawing power from the Arduino's 5 volt and ground pins. Next, we connect the data pin of the receiver to one of the digital pins on the Arduino. The code I wrote uses the IR library that's readily available through the Arduino sketch interface, and it allows us to read the pulsed codes that are emitted by the IR LED in our remote control. The values received are hexadecimal, and each key on the remote puts out a different value so that the receiving device can tell which key is volume up, volume down, channel, change, input, and anything else that your device might need for operation. Once we've noted the codes of the keys that we want to use, it's a simple matter of writing a function that uses a switch statement to compare the incoming codes with a list of the codes we want to trigger actions on our Arduino. Before we connect the relay, test your device to make sure that you can trigger different actions with different keys. In this case, I'm using the serial console to have the Arduino report to me when it receives the proper code for various buttons that I want to use. Once we know that our IR receiver and switch statement is working properly, we can go ahead and connect our relay. If you wanted to save a little cash, you could buy bare relays in bulk for pennies. But if you want a neater look and don't mind paying a little bit more for prepackaged relay boards, you can get 1, 2, 4, 6, and 8 relay boards that are ready to connect to your Arduino. No matter how many relays we use, connecting it to the Arduino is the same process. Provide 5 volt power to the board, then connect each trigger pin to a different digital pin on the Arduino. These relays have a normally open and normally closed position that will flip back and forth depending if the pin it's connected to is high or low. I wrote my code to allow easy assignment and reassignment of the IR receiver and relay pin simply by changing the pin numbers at the top of the code. And I wrote a function that will toggle the relays between on and off every time a button is pressed. Assuming that you've wired your relays correctly and to the right pins, your remote control can now trigger each relay between on and off with a single press of a key. I'm using my relays to switch 12-volt devices on and off, but these same relays can handle up to 250 volts, 10 amps of AC current, which means that they could be wired into everything from AC lights to garage doors to electric shutters and fans. The only real limitation is your imagination. To watch a full explanation of this IR hack and for complete copies of my code, just watch episodes 341 and 342 of Know How at twit.tv/KH. I'm Father Robert Ballasier, the Digital Jesuit for Twit TV.
Oh, man, I thought it was done.
No.
I thought we were done with this creepy thing.
It's kind of creepy, isn't it? Look at that. Hello, Jerry. I'm coming for you, my friend. Remember that haircut I gave you early? See, it won't fly forward because it's close to Jerry.
Oh,
it'll fly backwards.
Oh, man.
Because it can't see anything behind it. So you have to kind of watch out. See, that's as close as it'll get to you, Jerry. You're
wow.
safe. Unless
Hi.
I back into you. Isn't that creepy? Look at that.
It is. Well, and it kind of has some eyes, you know, up at the top. Like, it definitely kind of looks like a robotic
oh,
face
yeah.
also.
Oh,
so.
Yeah.
It's kind of creepy. Not clown creepy.
You're probably
creepy.
Not supposed to do this inside.
I'm guessing not.
Yeah, I think this would probably not be approved use of the drone. But it is remarkable how well it'll
yeah.
How well it'll balance. And it's such a stable platform.
Man, it's crazy. Good work.
Nice. Whew. I just wanted to prove I could actually fly the dang thing. All right. We have a mailbag. Let's see it. If there's a drone in here. So DJI also makes another small foldable portable drone called the Spark. It's a little less expensive. I haven't tried that, and I don't know. Oh, I don't know why, but this keeps showing up. You know why?
It's got to be bad.
Jerry explained this to me. He grew up on this stuff, and he wants to put it in the Talvala oven, I think.
So. I've had my share of hearty meals by Dinty
yeah.
Moore. Not
hearty
in a really
Dinty
long
Moore.
Time.
Hearty but. Dinty Moore. All right. Would you like to pick a mailbag question? They're all for you anyway, so you start.
All right, email number one is from Tim.
says, I'm considering using Chrome and Android's built-in password smart lock manager over LastPass. I'm fully vested into Android and Chromebooks and use two-factor authentication. Do you see any advantages or disadvantages to migrating my passwords to Google's password manager? I seem to recall a couple of years ago that Leo suggested that you should not let Chrome store your passwords because they are saved in plain text. Is that still the case? I don't believe that's still the case.
No, it's not. So for a while, Google said, look, if somebody has access to your physical access to your computer, all bets are off. So we're not going to bother to encrypt the passwords stored in the browser. In fact, Firefox did the same thing.
Oh, wow.
But that's changed. And if you now, the key on this is to have a passphrase locking your sync. Mm-hmm. Okay. But and everybody should do that. And it's the same with Firefox. If you turn on encryption with a passphrase, it's not going to encrypt it unless you do that, then it's not shown in the clear. You have to unlock it with the passphrase.
Right.
So in that respect, it's a good manager, but it is only a useful manager if it's on every platform you use.
Yeah, and that's, I think, one of the big challenges here, at least with Google's Smart Lock, is it's going to work with Chrome, it's going to work with Android and Chromebooks, not totally cross-platform. You're not going to get this on Firefox, you're not going to be able to get access to those passwords there. If you're all in, though, if you've got like Chrome OS, Chromebook, Android device, it's a reasonable password manager system. It's just not as fully featured as LastPass, and definitely not cross-platform. LastPass has that benefit, is that you can pretty much put that on anything.
Remember, passwords aren't just for websites. They're for apps as well.
Yeah.
And I don't think it'll autofill app passwords.
It will, actually.
Oh, will it?
On Android, it will. They've integrated your passwords pretty deep as far as
that's
concerned.
Oh, that's nice.
So Smart Lock for Android also allows you to unlock your devices by being nearby. So you could use your phone. If you have your phone in your pocket and you open up your Chrome OS or your Chromebook, it would recognize that and unlock. Smart Lock for passwords is the password element to that.
That's
and that does fill into apps. It does fill into web browser pages and stuff like that. So you can choose to do that on the system level. Before Oreo, that might have been a little more appealing, but one of the changes that they brought into Oreo, which who knows when you're going to see it, but just so you know, is a new autofill implementation that allows for the same autofill that you would get from Smart Lock for passwords to tap into third-party password.
So LastPass or Dashlane or 1Password, those will work even better.
And it's integrated on a system level in a better way. The way it was before worked, but it was a little more hacky.
LastPass does a few other things. It has a password generator. I think that's fairly
important.
And
that's super valuable. Yeah.
For $2 a month, which is what LastPass now costs, I think LastPass is worth it.
Not to mention, I couldn't find an easy way to migrate. Like, if you want to go all in on Smart Lock for passwords, and you've got 500 passwords, you know, I have a ton of passwords in my LastPass. If I really wanted to migrate, I think I'd have to start over. I don't know if there's an easy import. There might be third-party tools.
I found, I haven't tried it, a post that says, of course, LastPass lets you export into CSV file, comment separated value file. If you export your LastPass password vault that way, you'll probably want to remove a lot of excess data that isn't supported by the Google Password Manager by, what is it called, SafePass?
SafeLock?
SmartLock. Then there is, I guess, in the About Chrome settings, look for Import-Export, Import-Export. There's apparently a setting that you can turn on. I'm not sure what happens from there. Does it pop up a dialog after you close it? I don't know.
Right.
That will let you import comma-separated values of a password database. Try it, see if it works.
Yeah.
I haven't tried it because I'm going to stay with LastPass. All the additional features of LastPass to me are well worth
it. It's not just password. It's that password auto generation. It's the family sharing. Yeah. It's a credit card and address.
Exactly.
It's secure notes.
I put in the
all
secure notes
stuff.
Passports and driver's licenses, insurance information, all the stuff I wouldn't want to store publicly. I trust the LastPass Secure Vault. And I put everything in there.
Yeah, and you can protect that with two-factor authentication
Which
as
I
well.
Do. Yeah. In fact, I use a YubiKey, which means if you don't have that physical YubiKey,
it's the way to do
you
it.
Cannot get into my password vault.
Yeah.
So, it'll work. But stick with LastPass. $2 a month.
I would agree.
Do you have any this is question two from Joe. Do you have any another one for you, recommendations for ruggedized cell phones? He does some hazardous stuff. His phone is in danger. is at risk.
Danger.
He says, I'm currently using a Samsung Rugby Pro. That sounds pretty tough. Stuck on Android 4.1.2. That's not so tough.
No.
He likes it, but recently stopped connecting to his computer, so he's been looking for a replacement. He's leaning toward something called the Cat S60. Dual SIM infrared camera, ruggedized features. Have you seen the S60? Do you have other choices for him?
I've not played around with the S60 personally. It seems on a lot of rugged device lists to be one of the top selections. As you say, you know, it's $630, so it's not inexpensive. It's right in that midpoint, I'd say, right now. 4.7-inch HD display, carbon fiber back. It has an SOS button on the side for sending your location to your preferred contacts. And like you said, it has the FLIR thermal imaging camera, which... I mean, I don't know if that's useful to you. It's not useful to everybody. Nice to have. It is stuck on Android 6.0 Marshmallow, though, so it's a little outdated, and that's something to consider. Maybe Cat will, like I did searching to see if they ever have plans to update it to Nougat, let alone Oreo, and, you know, we're more than a year past Nougat, and there's still no word. If you go to their product page, it still says Android Marshmallow, so... keep that in mind. You know, it's already behind on updates, and it's still a prime cost.
Marshmallow.
Yeah.
Of course, the Samsung S8 Active is out. That's also on Marshmallow, though. Oh, no, it's Nougat.
No. That's Nougat. Okay. Will be updated to Oreo by the end of the year.
I don't know how rugged it is.
Well, it's not bad. It's all the internals of the S8, right? 5.8-inch Super AMOLED.
Which is a great
QHD display.
Love it. Yeah.
Snapdragon 835, 4 gigs of RAM. Excellent camera, obviously. Polycarbonate back, a metal frame, and rubber bumpers. And then, lucky you, Bixby button. IP68 certified, so that's dust and waterproof, up to 5 feet for 30 minutes. It's MIL STD 810G compliant, so it was tested in 21 environmental conditions. It's possibly more hardened for consumer use than it is necessarily for industrial use.
You know what your MIL spec is for your current phone. You could check and compare that and see if it's tough enough for you.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, it's Samsung's hardened phone, as far as that's concerned.
The Motorola Z Force is also pretty tough.
That was another one that I was looking at. I don't know if it's necessarily rugged entirely, but it has a shatterproof screen. That doesn't mean that it's a scratch-proof screen, but it has a shatterproof screen at least.
Right.
And if that's what you're most worried about, you know, it's got a metal casing and all that. It's really thin. It's definitely one of Motorola's premium smartphones right now. You know, that's definitely something to consider. It's on Nougat. It'll be upgraded to Oreo by the end of the year. And you also have the ability to use the Pogo pins for Moto Mods if the modularity aspects are intriguing to you. That's maybe the least durable of the three, but it has the shatterproof screen, and that's worth mentioning if you want like a premium smartphone from a reasonable manufacturer.
If you want Android information, this is the guy right here, the host of All About Android. Tuesdays about 5:30, 6 o'clock in the afternoon. Yes, Jason Howell.
Thank you.
Catch him on TNT Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, and of course, all over the place, this week when I'm gone. You're
going
to take over some of the shows. You're going to do Twig?
Yeah, going to do Twig this week, next week. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Good. Thank you, Jason.
Yeah, you
always
bet.
A pleasure.
Always fun.
Shall we fly out of here?
Sure.
All right, catch this drone action here. We're going to see if I can. It's going to. Now wave goodbye.
Goodbye,
Jason. Goodbye. Goodbye, everybody. See you next time on the new Screensavers. Bye bye.
See ya.
Whoa.